Good afternoon. Welcome to today's session. We will begin with a little meditation. Letting go of all thoughts. Connected to my external life. Separating myself from all thoughts of the past and the future. Separating myself from all sensations of this physical body. And turning my attention inwards. I travel deep within. Deep within to the center of my existence. I experience my entire existence merging, getting concentrated into a tiny point of light. The soul, the spirit, my original and eternal existence, and I experience the deep filling silence of the spirit. It is as though this physical world has ceased to exist in my awareness. And even as I can hear the sounds of this physical world, I listen to the sound of silence within. I, the soul, just a spark of infinite energy. And in this consciousness of my eternal self, I go beyond all limits of this physical universe. Beyond all limits of time and space, until I see myself in that world of light. The eternal home of the soul. And I see myself once again in the presence of God, the light of all lights, shining down upon me. And I allow this light to enter me, healing, purifying. Returning the soul to its original stage of fullness and peace. And purity. Experience of being a soul in the presence of God, this invisible union of light. Holding on to this light, and this deep, silent power of peace. Holding on to the presence of the Supreme, I allow myself to return gently back to this world of matter. Back to this room and back to this body, to once again take my place behind the eyes in the center of the brain, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. This body, my costume, and I, the soul, the eternal actor, ready to play my part through the costume of the body in this drama of life, in this game of victory and defeat. Detached, the silent observer, peaceful, thank you.
once again. There are some seats here, so if someone wants to come in the front, you can. It's getting quite warm, isn't it? Almost hot. So people enjoy it very much. You see, I've had too much heat in my life. I've lived in India and Dubai and, you know, not very cold places. So when it gets so hot, my brain stops functioning. It's not hot, but it's funny. My cousin, one of my cousins, she was born and brought up in India. She got married and her husband is from England, so he was born and brought up in England. So England is also quite famous for the weather like Denmark. Usually dark and grey and raining. So she goes there and it's all dark and cloudy outside. And she looks out and she tells her husband, "Wow, what a nice weather." He looks at her. Did I marry the right person? What are you talking about? Are you okay? But you see, the thing is, when it's so hot, in India, of course, there are also cold places. There are the Himalayas, there is Kashmir. But, you know, most of it can be quite hot when it's down on the plains. And when the clouds come and when it's dark, it's a sign of rain and it's a relief from heat. See? So in the mind, the association works that way. And she sees the clouds and she says, expecting it. But after having lived there for a few years, now she has changed. Anyway. So this month we have been looking at this whole subject of relationships. And today we will look at this whole issue of sorrow. Especially sorrow as we experience in relationships and through relationships. How our experience of sorrow, we will look at it two ways. Firstly, how our experience of sorrow influences our relationships. And then the other way around, how relationships can give us the experience of sorrow. So in many philosophies, especially religious philosophies, spiritual philosophies, they always speak about not giving sorrow. That is something we can understand, right? Don't give sorrow to people. So don't speak words that give sorrow to others. Don't do actions that give sorrow to others. Don't do things that give sorrow to others. That is something that we can understand, right? And yet we end up sometimes giving sorrow. Knowingly, unknowingly, whatever it is, we end up giving sorrow. One is the issue of giving sorrow. So when we look at sorrow, there is this whole issue of giving sorrow. But then, what about taking sorrow? How is it possible? Okay, so giving sorrow, we can understand to some extent, okay, I should not be giving sorrow to people, but can we stop ourselves from taking sorrow? Is it possible? What do you do? And people do all sorts of things in the world. Someone says something to me, someone does something, unconsciously, consciously, whatever may be the reason. How do we not take sorrow? And first of all, why do people do things? Why do people give sorrow? Why do people do things that eventually give sorrow to others? Many times in our own life, we might have experienced that we don't want to give trouble to others. We don't want to give any sorrow to others. But somehow, we end up doing something or saying something that becomes the cause for the other's sorrow and suffering. Yeah, we've had this experience. So why does that happen? Why do we end up giving sorrow to others? Even though we may not want to. Why does that happen? We have to look at the roots, no? Otherwise, you know, if you have some weeds or plants growing in your garden that you don't want to grow, so you see them growing and you cut off the tops, you trim it, but then you grow back again. So I'd say, okay, I've been getting very angry with my wife, so from tomorrow I have to stop being angry. Okay, I've been angry on my children and it's not good. We all know that it's not good to get angry, so I should not get angry on my children anymore, right? After a few days, I repeat it anyway. No, no, I should not be angry. And then I repeat it anyway. So what is the reason that we end up giving sorrow? What is your experience?
We have to come out with our own issues sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's because of misunderstanding.
Yes.
Differences between people.
Yeah. So we know this intellectually, you know, there are differences between people because of misunderstanding. So it's a misunderstanding. Even then I end up doing things.
Yeah.
What is it that makes us give sorrow?
We don't get what we expect.
We don't get what we expect. Yes, certainly. We don't get what we expect. And?
We cannot fulfill others' needs.
We cannot fulfill others' needs. Okay, we have some expectations and therefore we are not able to fulfill. We will look at these things, but at the same time we must also understand that if I am giving something, I have that. I am having sorrow within me. I am carrying sorrow within me. And therefore, it comes out. It will come out. At some point or the other, it will come out. If I am having sorrow, of course, at some point, I have taken sorrow. And if I have taken sorrow, even though I may not want to give sorrow, because I am carrying it within me, eventually something will make me express it in some way or the other, inadvertently. I may not want to do it, but I end up doing it. So therefore, if I want to really stop giving sorrow, I must first learn how not to take sorrow. And how to deal with the sorrow that I am carrying within me. Are we all carrying sorrow within us? So one is the experience of sorrow. So sorrow, we can say, is an experience of, say, dejection. Many people describe sorrow as a state where there is a, you have taken in a lot and you have sort of accepted it. You have accommodated that experience within yourself and there is a feeling of dejection. There is a feeling of resignation. This is the state that I am in. And very closely connected to the experience of sorrow is the experience of suffering. What is the difference between sorrow and suffering? Is there a difference? What is the difference between sorrow and suffering? Yes? What is your experience?
Suffering is somehow connected to that you have sorrow. So
yeah.
It comes from the sorrow.
Okay. There is a sorrow that I'm carrying inside and that leads to some suffering.
Yeah.
At the same time, when I'm suffering, that also leads to the experience of sorrow. So suffering normally is spoken about as a state of distress. It's a more active state. Sorrow is a more general state. I'm carrying, I have taken in, I have accepted things within me and I'm harboring them in my heart. Suffering is that momentary state where there is an agitation, there is a distress. There is an active state of distress. So for example, as you've said, because I'm carrying a certain sorrow within me, that can come out in the experience of suffering, experience of distress. There is an agitation, there is an agony, there is a pain. And then I experience it, there is a distress. So normally we experience suffering in very many ways, but for example, negative emotions like anxiety, emotions like fear, say emotions like anger, etc., etc. They all indicate some element of suffering. There is an agitation involved. Anxiety, worry, thinking about something too much. Yes?
Isn't it also a choice?
Yes. Can you explain a little more?
Well, we all go through things, but it's your choice to keep it, take it.
Yes.
And suffer it.
Yeah. You're 100% right. Many people have said, I don't know if you know of this event, it's a real life incident, some of you may know it quite well, it's mentioned in many, many books. This is an experience of someone who survived the Second World War concentration camps. And I think it's also mentioned in one of the books of Stephen Covey, etc. Very famous incident. But it's a good incident that really expresses this point that you have mentioned very, very clearly. So there is this person, you know, people were caught and put in the concentration camps, not because of any crime that they had committed, but because they belonged to a certain community. So this person was put in there, And he had led quite a good life, as much as possible. He had tried to do good, but he lost everything, his family, everything, and he was put in the concentration camp, and he had to go through a lot of suffering. And in that experience, he said that there was a lot of anger. So after the whole episode got over, he was interviewed by some people, and I think he also wrote a book on his experiences. But someone asked him, so how did you deal with that experience of distress and experience of anger and experience of pain? How did you deal with that? And he said, in the beginning, I felt totally helpless. So there was a state of, I gave in. Initially, there was a lot of distress because of the pain and the anxiety I was feeling. What's going to happen? What's happening to my wife, to my children? And eventually, I find out I've lost a lot of my family members. So then you sort of give in. So there is that suffering, and then you give in, and then you experience sorrow. And he said one day he was being, they were also used sometimes for experimentation, you know, human experiments. And so he was being tortured. And he said that experience was so painful, I was just there and I couldn't do anything. I had no strength in my body, even if I want, and I was feeling anger at the same time because I wanted to get out at these people. I had no strength, even if I wanted to, I could not do it. And then he was a very religious man, so he sort of called out to God and he said, you know, why is this happening to me? What have I done to deserve this? If I had done something wrong, I can understand. What have I done to deserve this? And I feel so much anger. They have taken away all my freedom, everything that I loved. And then it's like a voice inside his head says, but you are still free. Mm. And he says, what do you mean I'm still free? Mm. I've lost everything. I'm being treated like an animal. I hate these people so much. And then the voice inside his head says, but you're free to choose to forgive or to hate. There is a choice. Mm. And he said the moment he understood that, he realized at that point that yes, it is my choice. I can choose to hold the hatred against these people or I can choose to forgive. And then he had that deep insight and of course from that a deep sense of relief that yeah, I can actually choose to let go of this anger. But of course that requires a lot of strength and he managed to get that strength through whatever practice he was having at that point. So yes, you're right that it is of course a matter of choice. But you know, at the same time, we all know many a times in our life, we don't want to take sorrow. We know someone has said something, say my wife or someone's husband or someone's children, they have said something and I understand intellectually it's coming from a space of fear. They didn't really mean it. They've just said it because they're feeling insecure. And I understand intellectually, but I still harbor it in my heart. I still feel the pain, isn't it? So I understand. And I know it's my choice, but against my conscious will, I hold on to that experience of negativity. I hold on to that experience of sorrow. And this is what we will try and look at today. So there are these negative aspects of suffering, the aspect of anxiety, fear, or any of these negative emotions that we experience. Can there be also some other expressions of sorrow and suffering, which we usually consider quite positive? Yes. Can there be? Because remember, when we're speaking about suffering, there is agitation. There is agitation inside. Yeah. Can there be some commonly understood positive emotions that also have the sense of agitation? Yes.
Passion.
Passion. We have spoken about this, of course, also before. And connected to passion are things like excitement, things like infatuation. How do we understand these as suffering? Passion actually comes from the Greek word for suffering. It's called pakhos or something, I don't know. Anyone who knows Greek will know it. You can look it up on the web. It actually, the word passion comes from the Greek word for suffering. And therefore, they speak of the Passion of the Christ. It was a movie, The Passion of the Christ. It's about the time, the capture of Christ, the crucifixion of Christ. That is the suffering of Christ. The understanding spiritually is, and the ancient people probably understood that quite well, that this passion, this desire to do so many things, and it comes from this deep inner distress and great inner emptiness, the void. And I want to fill it up by something. And there is this agitation. Romantic love, falling in love, it's the same experience, infatuation. things are bloated up, the image of the other is exaggerated to unrealistic extent. And so eventually when it's exaggerated, it needs just a pinprick and then it just goes down completely. So the whole experience of infatuation, the excitement, let's do this, let's go for a vacation somewhere. Oh, my work gives me passion. I have a fire in my belly. You know, I can really do something, achieve, accomplish. Where is all this? Look at this, it's suffering, right? It's suffering. Inside the soul is suffering. There is a great emptiness. There is a great void. And of course, we will look at this. We have been speaking about this quite a lot, but... And it can express in different ways. So when it comes to passion, it could be any form of passion. Passion, for example, to achieve and accomplish and to prove ourselves to the world. It could be sexual passion. What about sexual desire? Where does that come from? This desire to possess the other, where does that come from? Spiritually, we understand that also as a significant expression of suffering, of emptiness. Fill up. Feeling empty inside, I want pleasure, I want to fill up. Some philosophers have also explained this in a very interesting way. They say, the soul has no gender, right? The soul has no gender. The soul is neither male nor female. Soul is energy. The soul takes a physical form. We are male, we are female. The moment I take a physical form, I learn to identify with this physical form. I am taught to identify also with this physical form as I am growing up. Boys do this, girls do this, boys don't do this, girls don't do this. More or less in many cultures. Yeah? Even in cultures like Scandinavia, where there is not so much difference between male and female, even there, a lot of research has shown that eventually people end up behaving differently with boys and girls. There's been research in Sweden looking at students, school children, and they were looking at teachers' behavior towards the student. It was videotaped, everything. And you could very clearly see the way the teachers were behaving with the students. It's a boy or a girl, very, very different. The expectations they were having from them. So eventually we are taught. And so the moment I learn to identify with this body, I am male, or I am female. And the moment I identify with the body, there is a split in the soul. I have lost that feminine part of me, or I have lost that masculine part of me. That creates an emptiness. And then I want to fill up that emptiness. How do I do it? I do it physically. Because I don't know how to do it spiritually. So I do it physically. So behind sexual desire also then, it is this great emptiness operating, expressing itself as suffering in different ways, agitation. But anyway. So when we look at relationships then, we can of course experience anxiety, fear, anger in relationships. We also experience passion, excitement, infatuation in relationships. But eventually we know that these things give us of course some experience of pleasure. And so they also give us an experience of happiness, relationships, they give us an experience of safety and security, they give us an experience of many things. And therefore, we develop this dependence on relationships because they give us so much. At the same time, there are so many expectations, as some of you have already spoken about. We expect a lot because we expect that relationship to fill up my emptiness. We expect that romantic love to make me whole and complete. We expect this passion I am feeling, this excitement to give me that experience of bliss and pleasure and fullness. And of course, when it doesn't happen, then I experience the negative states. So my dependence and my expectations are very closely connected. Because I expect and they are fulfilled to some extent, there is satisfaction. I become dependent. I become dependent, I develop an attachment. And my expectations, of course, come from this desire. Attachment and desire are very frequently spoken of as the two main roots of suffering. Attachment is clinging, is holding on. Desire is craving, wanting. So one is clinging and one is wanting, desiring, craving. So I want, I desire, I crave for relationships. And in relationships, I crave for affection. I crave for respect. I crave for love. I crave for understanding. And when I start experiencing that in my relationships, then I want to cling to these relationships. I don't want to let go of these relationships because they're giving me those experiences. So there is the attachment and there is the desire. Sorry? Of course. Yeah, because very frequently we experience them in the same relationship. So they are, but they are not the same. They are two distinct experiences. Desire is wanting. Attachment is holding on. So why do I hold on? Because I believe this person or this relationship will satisfy my desires. My emptiness, whatever it is, my desire to fill up my emptiness inside, they will give me that. And therefore I hold on to that. And as we understand spiritually, from a spiritual perspective, attachment comes from this experience of inner insecurity. And desire comes from this experience of inner incompleteness. And of course, from a spiritual perspective, we understand that the moment the soul identifies with the body, there is insecurity. Why? Because the body is finite. The body will finish one day. So the moment I identify with this physical body and my physical existence, automatically there will be insecurity because this will finish one day. And everything associated with this will finish one day. And therefore I want to hold on to all these things, but that will never happen, I know that. And so the insecurity will always be there. The moment I identify with this body, there is incompleteness, because I cannot be everything in the world. I cannot be male and female. If I am a male, I can never know what it is to be a mother. Yeah? If I am a female, maybe I can know what it is to be a father. So maybe it's better to be a female. So anyway, but there is always an incompleteness, right? I identify with the body, then I am Asian or European or American or Muslim or Christian or Hindu. There is a separateness. And the moment I have this experience of separateness, there is incompleteness. The soul has no separation. As souls, as spirits, we're all the same. We're all the children of one God. There is no separation. And the moment there is a separation, there is insecurity and there is incompleteness. And the moment after, and I want to fill up that incompleteness and I want to get rid of that insecurity, and therefore, all those things that give me this experience of attachment, I want to cling to them. I want to protect them. And so when it comes to relationships, I will try to possess and I will try to protect. Possess the other in all sorts of ways. Emotionally, possess the other completely. The other's feelings have to be directed towards me. Possess the other sexually. Possess the other even spiritually in some ways. Just possess the other completely so that I feel, okay, I am full. How can I ever be full that way? Or protect, hold on, cling to that relationship and try to defend it, try to. And then you imagine, the smallest thing is imagined as a threat to that relationship. Because then you are afraid you will lose that relationship. Yeah? Let's take a few examples. So this example, I keep repeating, but I'll repeat it once more. What should I have? Running out of examples. So I will repeat it once more. There are finite examples in the world. There are finite people in the world. So anyway, you might have heard this before. Let's say example of a mother and a son. Yeah. So there is this video that I had seen once. It explains very beautifully the dynamics between a mother and a child and how situations unnecessarily get spoiled. Unnecessarily. There is no need for them to get spoiled. So what happens, there is this young guy, he's an artist. So he has an early morning for an artist. We have so many stereotypes, but anyway, so whatever it is, early morning, 10:30 in the morning, whatever. He wakes up and then he has to go to his studio. So he has to go to his studio because a model is coming and he has to paint the portrait. And so he's running out of the house. And his mother knows that, oh, my son is going to have a very famous model coming to the studio. And therefore, I have to, you know, make sure that he goes, he's happy and he has good breakfast and everything. So he wakes up early in the morning and she makes a lot of nice breakfast for him. So in the morning he gets up late and he's running out of the door, and then she comes up and he says, son, where are you going? Come have breakfast. The morning getting late, I have to go. It's a very important appointment. But she says, how can you go like this to work without having breakfast? Come eat, you must eat something. She says, mom, you don't understand, I'm really getting late, I need to go. She says, oh my, you never listen to me. I know I woke up early in the morning, I made all these things for you, you don't want to eat. She says, mom, you just don't listen to me. I'm getting late, and runs out of the house. Now she's very upset. Look at my son, he doesn't care for me, never listens to me. And I've made all these nice things. I woke up early in the morning. I spent all my time. I did not sleep properly in the night. And then I baked all these things for him. And he doesn't want to eat. This guy is sitting in the taxi and feeling, oh, my mother, she's always after me. His mood is spoilt. He doesn't know how to go and do his work properly. He goes to the studio. The artist is there. But because his mood is spoilt, he misbehaves with her. He's not able to do a good job. And that's all because of his mother, right? So then he blames his mother for it. And he doesn't come back home till late. Mother is waiting for him to come. Let him come. I'm going to speak to him. Why does he behave like this with me? And he postpones his return. And then every hour that passes by, she's getting more and more irritated because he's not coming back home. And then he comes back home late. He comes in and she's sitting right there in front of him. And he looks at her and then he walks away. And she says, look at him. I mean, he doesn't even say hello to me. Big disaster at home. And then it affects your relationship next day in the morning. No one wants to say good morning to anyone. And then, we've all experienced these things. So, what happens there? What is happening there? From the mother's side and from the son's side. The mother is doing all these things, yes?
A lack of communication?
Of course, at one level there is a lack of communication. But what are the deeper issues? There is a lot of communication there, by the way. They have spoken, and then they don't want to speak because they've already spoken too much. Yeah?
They depend too much on each other.
They depend too much, and there is this, I'm trying to protect that relationship. So the mother, being a mother, has become a way of filling that emptiness. And this relationship of a mother and son has become a way of filling that emptiness. And the desire is for my son to let me play the mother so I can feel good about myself. I can fill up this emptiness. Why? How do I fill up? I'm a good mother. I'm so kind. I'm so loving. I do so many good things for my son. See what a good mother I am. I feel full. Will I ever feel full that way? Because there will always be an insecurity associated with that. It's not wrong to bake nice things for your children, by the way. But the question is, where is it coming from? What are the intentions behind that? If, for example, I am dealing with my relationships out of insecurity and incompleteness, that is basically if I am operating from selfish intentions, I will always experience sorrow. Because I'm using that relationship to fill up my emptiness. And the funny thing is, what is wrong with doing some nice things for people? Nothing wrong with that. It's a nice thing to do nice things for other people. Make them happy, make them comfortable, make sure they are well taken care of. But the question is, what is my intention behind that? Am I doing it because they need it? Or am I doing it because I want to do it, because I want to feel good about myself? And therefore what happens when in such relationships is you want to cling, you hold on, you become over-possessive. It could happen in the relationship of a mother and a child. It can happen in the relationship of a husband and wife. It can happen in any relationship. Then I want to protect, I want to cling on, over-possessiveness. And the other gets suffocated. It is not the nature of the soul. We all want to be free. And so because of this false sense of love, I will start suffocating the other. And the other, okay, I've had enough, I want to get out.
How would she do it if she did it from the right place?
The right place? What do you think? Supposing there was no selfish intention, which would mean no emptiness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A person is operating from a space of fullness. I understand my son has to wake up in the morning and go, so it's good that he has some nice breakfast and goes for work. So she wakes up in the morning and she does it. You tell me, what would be, if it is coming from a space of fullness, what would the behavior be? How would it be? And this guy's, yes?
She wouldn't be angry when he had to go.
She wouldn't be angry. Why am I getting angry? Where does anger come from? By the way, that is also a word for sorrow in Old Norse language, in Old Danish. Anger is sorrow. Where is the anger coming from? Yes?
The lack of control.
Yeah, and the lack of control is coming from where? Because I've given away control to the other. I've given away control of my happiness to that relationship. The anger is coming from my inability, my frustration, my inability to fulfill that desire. So, for example, I can satisfy these expectations. So my son sits down and he has a very nice breakfast in front of my eyes. And then he tells me, oh mom, what a wonderful mother you are. You're the best mom in the world. And your cake tastes delicious. I mean, I've never had better cake than this. I feel very, very nice. And then that only deepens my dependence on that relationship. That deepens my dependence, that deepens my attachment, that deepens my insecurity, because eventually I will lose that relationship. One day I will lose that relationship. If nothing, through death, I will lose that relationship. That deepens my incompleteness, because I have given away control and therefore I feel more incomplete. And I try, so even through satisfaction, the emptiness is getting deeper, because it's an inner emptiness. Okay, if it is frustrated, what happens? The same insecurity I feel. I am unable to satisfy that, and therefore the insecurity, therefore the incompleteness, both ways, whether it is satisfied or not satisfied. There is a frustration of my desire. And like that, we can take up so many other relationships, and you take up any aspect of the relationship. Say, a father wants his son to go and study well, do his homework. So what is wrong with that? Anything wrong with that? Anything wrong with that? No. I want my son to go to school, come home, and play a little bit. Play as much as it's good for you. Watch some cartoon as much as it's good for you. And then sit and do your homework. It's good. Anything wrong with that desire? Nothing wrong with that desire, right? But the son wants to watch cartoon all the time. So the father is getting angry now, irritated with the son. Why is the anger coming? You tell me, why is the anger coming?
He wants something.
What does he want that he's not able to get? Anger, behind anger, there is either frustration or there is pain. So, what does he want? This.
He wants his son to be the best at school.
Why does he want that? So I
want
to get something out of that. I am trying to live my life through my son. Maybe all that I could not accomplish in my life, I want my son to accomplish for me. So I can feel proud of my son. So when someone comes and says, oh, your son, such a brilliant student. It's a reflection of what a good father I am, right? So I can try and fill my emptiness in such ways, and eventually what happens is it gives me sorrow, and it gives the other sorrow. So the poor chappy wants to watch some cartoon, and then I say, you should do your homework and all that, and then he gets upset. They've already done, and then he gets fed up with studies. I remember my grandfather, a very nice man, he loved me very much, my mother's father. But he was very good at mathematics. See, he was brilliant at mathematics. And he always wanted to be a mathematician. But he couldn't be. For whatever practical reasons, he had to become a lawyer. And then he got into the administrative service, and he was working as one of the government departments as the secretary and the chief of that department. So he could never be a mathematician. So what did he decide? He took upon himself the responsibility that all his grandchildren should know mathematics very well. So then, whenever he would find us, especially me, I don't know why, but whenever he would find us, he would make us sit and study mathematics. So we had to know the tables by heart. So if he said, 7 into 7, I need to know, pat. Is it 49? Yeah, I know a little bit now. And okay, he was trying to do his best, but that made me detest mathematics from the bottom of my heart. Because the heart doesn't have a bottom, but from the depth of my heart. Dislike, they hate that subject so much, so much. I've never hated anything else more in my life. Which was such a pity, which was such a pity, because I disliked that subject so much, I never could learn that subject properly. I learned it. I managed to pass, I even got some good marks here and there. But there was such a strong dislike that I started disliking all my teachers who used to teach mathematics. Association, see? And then I grew up, and then, of course, I was in the university. I met this other mathematician, brilliant, brilliant person. And then he spoke about mathematics in such a wonderful way. He connected it to music and philosophy and all sorts of things. And I got so interested in mathematics. But by then, my foundation was very weak. I could not do anything. So I sometimes used to tell my grandfather, if you just let me on my own, I would have actually become a mathematician. You know, but because you were after me, and that's not something I could ever do. But anyway. So, he wants to live his life through us, no? And these are very often quite innocent things, but eventually they have a big impact because they create the opposite of what we really want to create through them. So, anyway, so what are my intentions? There's nothing wrong as such in doing all these things, but what are my intentions? And my selfish intentions, where do these selfish intentions come from? And if I give in to these intentions again and again, and this is where the process of meditation helps, because meditation is, of course, not just about sitting and meditating or remembering God, but it is also using the power I get through meditation to look at myself honestly. And there are certain rules that we understand that if I am getting anxious, if I am getting angry, there is almost always, I cannot say always because I don't know all the cases in the world, but certainly almost always, and in my case certainly always, whenever I have looked at myself honestly, there is always something selfish operating behind it. And the moment I catch it, I am actually released from the anger. As I experienced once with my mother, no, I must have told you. So I took her once to the doctor, and the doctor told her, oh, you have so many problems, and so you have all these medicines, gave her a big list of medicines. Said, oh, mom, wow, you should have all these medicines, and I bought all these medicines for her. And, you know, my mother being my mother, she doesn't take her medicines. So then I tell her, so do you have your medicine? She said, oh, no, I forgot. Next day, mom, did you have your medicine? No, I forgot. I don't need those medicines. I'm fine. I said, come on, what's wrong with you? You should have those medicines. Okay, I'll take them. Then she takes them. For a few days she takes, then she forgets. Again I ask her, did you have your medicine? No, I forgot. Then I start getting angry at her. What's wrong with you? Why don't you take your medicines? Then she says, why are you speaking to me like this? I'm your mother. Don't you have any respect for your mother? Why did I get angry at my mother? Why did I get angry at her? Yeah?
You're afraid of losing her.
One possibility is that. Pretty nice possibility. Okay. One is, of course, as you said, I'm afraid of losing her. That means what? It's again my selfishness, right? One possibility. My selfishness. I don't want her to go. Because if she doesn't take her medicines, she may fall ill and she may die, and therefore I'm getting all that love and affection, everything from her, and I have all these desires, and I want her to fill up my emptiness, all that will go away, and therefore, mom, take your medicine, be well, be immortal, don't die before I die. My selfishness. And the moment I understand that, I have a key to change my emotion and therefore transform my relationships. It's my selfishness. But that could only be one reason. Another reason, you said, I've spent so much of energy and money, etc. on that, right? Yeah, so maybe I feel that's been a waste, a sense of ego and whatever it is, that could be one. Another reason could be, well, if she falls ill, she'll go to the hospital. She goes to the hospital, who's going to take care of her? I. Who's going to spend all the money on her treatment? I. And all the money I'm saving to buy my Ferrari, what's going to happen to that? You go into her treatment? No, you stay well, because I want to buy my Ferrari. So there could be many reasons, but whatever the reasons are, the reasons invariably will be selfish. And the moment I honestly look at myself and I identify that reason that is behind my experience of suffering, through which I'm giving suffering to others, I'm liberated. I have the possibility then of transforming it. And if I give in to those selfish intentions, the more I give in to that, I will only lose my self-worth at a deep level. I'm going to lose my self-worth. Because deep inside, the soul is not selfish. That is not the original nature of the soul. The original state of the soul is fullness. And if I allow myself to give in to the selfish intentions again and again and again, it's like I'm going against my nature. And if I'm going against my nature, I'm losing respect for myself. And the more I lose respect for myself, the more I would want others to respect me. The more I would want others to show respect for me. And the more I want this, the more hypersensitive I will get about the smallest signs of rejection, smallest signs of disrespect. So I walk into the office, my friend at work forgets to smile at me. Why is the person not smiling? Well, the person is not smiling, the person probably had a fight with his wife, the person probably had so many things. It's not all about you. No, but I look at it, why is that person not smiling at me? And 3 days have gone by, the person hasn't even said hello. Very strange. What kind of a friend is he? Is it all about me? Is life all about me? That person may be having a lot of other issues. No. But I want that person to make me feel good by smiling, by saying hello, by taking me out for lunch, sitting and having lunch with me. That is my selfish intentions. And then I end up feeling the suffering in different ways. Then I end up communicating that suffering to that in that relationship, damage that relationship, which will give me further sorrow. And then I carry that sorrow within me. Mm-hmm. Yes?
But what about, this is an issue sometimes in many places in the working area, that people are being mobbed?
Mobbed by?
By others, or locked out of the... community?
Okay, you mean to say?
Yeah.
Like some people are isolated by others at the workplace, like that?
Ignored and...
Yes, such things happen. And there could be various reasons for that. So for example, if I experience myself being isolated at the workplace, then I need to honestly first look at, is that a reality, firstly? Or is that an imagination? Because sometimes I can even imagine I'm being isolated.
Let me also go further. Okay.
That could be one possibility. That need not be the only possibility. The other possibility is, it could be a reality that I'm getting isolated. And it could be, I mean, the world is full of problems and full of people who are prejudiced. So I could be isolated because of my religion, because of my faith, because of my race, because of language. These are realities. They do happen in the world. And there is discrimination in the world. Such things do happen. And I could experience that isolation. Another possibility could be, I have done something to upset others at the workplace, which I don't know how it has affected the others. Or the others have perceived that I have said or done something against their interests, and therefore I am being isolated. I had a very nice experience at my workplace once. I'll share it with you. So you see, I was working in a place where there was a lot of money, a lot of ways of making money, and also lots of ways of escaping the tax system. Cleverly done, legally done, but maybe not ethical. So the law would not be able to find out, but you know, there are ways of deviating. You can always find loopholes in the tax system and try to avoid the tax. So one day, We all used to have these regular meetings. And I, out of a false sense of honesty and virtuosity and generosity, or whatever you may call it, I sat down, and then everybody would say, okay, so it's open, I'm open for any, and you have any concerns, any questions. And I said, I sort of brought this matter up. I said, you know, a lot of us are making money by evading tax, and this is okay, it may not be illegal, but the issue is, if people get to know, it's not going to be very good for the organization, because then that will reflect on the organization. And this may not be the best thing. I tried to put it in a very, what I thought was a very decent and objective and detached way, but that raised many hackles. Because see what happens? Originally the soul inside is pure. And whenever I commit any act that is dishonest or borderline dishonest, there is a guilt I feel. All souls feel it. I may suppress it, but I feel that guilt. And when I said it like that openly, I hit on the guilt of all these souls, and it's not very pleasant to experience that guilt within you. There's a reaction, defense. And I lost many friends that day. Nothing changed to the system. The system remained. People kept evading tax. The system did not change. What I did, I lost friends. And I experienced very clearly those friends who were so close to me started avoiding me at the workplace. Now I can sit there and I can say, oh, this is so unfair, life is so unfair, I'm trying to do the good things. But if I'm trying to do good things just to fill up my emptiness, I lose wisdom. Another way of filling up the emptiness is by doing the right thing, by being virtuous, by being proper. Okay, let me be proper with myself. And yeah, what is wrong in trying to change the system? But I also need the wisdom, the understanding, is this really going to change the system? Because what it did was, it just shut down people. And later on I sat and I asked myself honestly, what created this isolation? And I realized it was my fault. I did not have sufficient wisdom to deal with that situation. And I could have. I had such good relationships at that workplace. If I had been a little more subtle, a little more clever and wise, very easily I could have influenced that system. And I could have changed that system, which we did next year. But for that 1 year, I lost many good friends at the workplace. Then I had to make a lot of effort to bring them back and sort of open up. And I did it because I realized it was my fault and therefore I had to make it right. So I made that effort and I brought them back. And eventually we sat down and we changed the system. But this happens. So I also need to look at, you know, what is it that I am doing that is contributing to this isolation? And it may actually be a very nice thing. Like, what is wrong with making people not evade tax? Nothing wrong with that. But I also need wisdom. And usually what happens is, if I'm operating from a space of emptiness, I'm in a hurry. I want to get things done. I want to make things right. Everything should be proper. Everything should be right. I'll be a crusader. I want to fight for my rights. Fight for the whole, for the rights of everybody in the world. And in my zeal, in my enthusiasm, which is coming, this passion which is coming from emptiness, I may actually end up doing stupid things. But if I'm working from a space of fullness, I understand, okay, the system is not right and this needs to be changed. But because there is no selfish intention, I will have wisdom. I will say, okay, so what is the best way of going about doing this? How do I work? And you know, in organizations are full of unethical practices. But there are leaders who can bring about the change. But to bring about the change, they have to be very detached. They can't let their passion, the fire in their belly take over. Then they end up doing stupid things. And then you don't accomplish really what you've set out to accomplish. So there are major implications when we work from selfish intentions. But then, one is the selfish intentions deepen my experience of a lack of self-worth. But then also, when there is a lack of self-worth, I will obviously keep following these selfish intentions. So I may not want to, but then their emptiness is so deeply motivating, I will become the victim of these selfish intentions again and again. So therefore, these selfish intentions, this lack of self-worth already has created this sense of sorrow inside me because of all the actions that I have performed through these selfish intentions, through which I have lost my self-worth. And because I have lost my self-worth, I give in to these intentions again and again. And therefore, I keep accumulating that sorrow. And through the sorrow, again, these things are fed. So for me, really, to break through, there has to be a healing of these experiences. If I really go deep inside, then those experiences need to be healed. All those things that I have done, through which I have lost my self-worth, all the times I have given in to selfish intentions, which are all, we don't even remember many of these things, they need to be healed. When they are healed, and I'm free from the sorrow I am carrying with me, then I will have the strength not to take sorrow. Otherwise, every experience I have will stimulate the experience of sorrow inside me, association, no? It's like an injury has not been healed. The smallest thing will aggravate the injury. If it has been healed, no problem. Skin like this, you put salt, no issues. The big wound, put salt, it's very, very painful. So many things that we react with pain and sorrow are because there is already this wound. And the smallest thing is stimulating that wound. And the larger the wound, the more easily it will be stimulated. So the smallest sign of rejection, the smallest sign of lack of attention from my partner, from my parent, from my brother, from my sister, I get disturbed. I start thinking, have I done something wrong? Or why is the person behaving like this? And then I deepen that experience, that wound. Therefore, the wound has to be healed. Unless and until that is healed. So what do we need for healing? The first talk that we had, or the second talk we had, was actually healing. What do we need for healing? What do we need to heal the sorrow inside? Many times I experience this. I understand that, you know, I should not be trying to do something to fill up the emptiness inside. But eventually, like say for example, if I'm working at a company, doing some coaching, some consulting, and then at the end of the process you have feedback. Until today, 16 years I've been practicing, 17 years almost now, meditation. Till today, when I'm getting that feedback, I feel a slight tension in the stomach. Earlier it used to be, whew, but now it's there, I can still feel it. Where is that coming from? Where is that anxiety coming from? Where is that coming from? Because I want my feedback to be good. Why? Because deep in my heart, I believe that will fill me up. See, intellectually I understand, but emotionally I become a victim because I have not completely healed. Until I am completely healed, these intentions will keep emerging. I may not want them to emerge, but they will keep emerging. But the knowledge will help me in dealing with it. Then I say, okay, so feedback. Okay, it's good to have a good feedback, but that's not going to fill up the emptiness inside. I should do my work well and take it. Is this a negative feedback? Let me learn from it. You know, sort of talk to yourself, but the feeling is there. When the healing has been complete, the sign of that healing will be there will be no tension, there will be no anxiety, there will be no fear. You will look at it, you will deal with it, and you will move on. And so therefore the healing has to be done. And of course, this is something that will take place over a period of time. What do you need for healing? In a physical wound, you have a physical wound. First thing you need, keep it clean. Right? You have to keep it clean. To keep it clean. Give it rest. And first you have to recognize that there is a wound. Many people have a physical problem. They ignore it. They deny it. As a friend, he had a psychological problem. And I could see very clearly that he was showing symptoms of depression. You know, these crying spells, getting disturbed by small things, thinking too much, not sleeping at nights. And many of my friends and even I told him, you know, well, you should probably take some professional help. Oh, I'm okay. This went on for 2 years. Now, after 2 years, he had a major breakdown, psychotic depression. He couldn't move. He was like this. He would just like walk in the middle of the street, he would just stand like that. That bad. So if I don't recognize, firstly, this wound, how will I heal it? So therefore, I need to first recognize, I need to give it rest, and I need to have cleanliness. And this is about the physical wound, but here we are speaking about the psychological wounds that are created through my selfish intentions and lack of self-worth over a long time, and through the experiences I've had from others, the sorrow I have taken in. So the mind also needs first purity. In spirituality, we speak about cleanliness as purity. Rest is through the experience of yoga, remembrance, and of course, recognition, understanding. So first is understanding. When I experience some sort of suffering,
I understand, whatever it may be. It may be a passion, it may be an excitement, it may be an infatuation, it could be anxiety, fear, or anger. Recognition. Where is this coming from? What am I trying to accomplish? Am I trying to fill up emptiness this way? Recognition. And then I need stillness. Yoga. Do it right now. Go deep within yourself. Withdraw. You're looking at me, you don't have to shut your eyes. That I am a soul, just a point of light, looking out through these eyes, listening through these ears. I'm a child of God. I experience the presence of God very close to me. It's invisible, but it is there, light. Like two sparkling stars, just I and he, and nothing else. You feel the silence?
Yeah.
You feel the stillness? You feel the power in it? Every time I experience any sign of suffering, do this. This will heal you. Just 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Do this, it will heal you. This is yoga. Very simple. Very simple. But along with that, I also need purity, cleanliness. It's very important. Even the body, you know, the state of the body influences the mind. Keeping the body clean is extremely important. Simple things like having a shower every day, very, very important. Keeping the apartment clean where I am living, extremely important. Because that influences the mind. Even this dirt, physical dirt, influences that will not allow me to be still and peaceful and calm. My surroundings have to be clean. My toilet has to be clean. Living alone in my apartment, who's going to come and wash my toilet anyway? I can clean it. It's a little dirty, it's okay. I'm compromising on my values. And that will not allow me to be at peace. When I sit in meditation, my mind will go towards my toilet. Because it is not clean. I clean it and I sit in meditation, I'll be released. No responsibilities. Clean. The body and the mind. Yeah? When it comes to sorrow, one is, of course, we experience sorrow through our relationships, through our, of course, our own selfish intentions. But sorrow can also be experienced in many, many other ways. And this connects to the experience of karma. So say, for example, the food that I eat, where is it coming from? If I eat meat, if I eat fish, that animal has died. Obviously, that animal did not die in happiness. The animal died in suffering, in sorrow, in fear. And we know the mind, whatever the mind is experiencing, the body gets affected. We know stress operates that way, right? So when I'm feeling anxious, when I'm feeling fearful, these vibrations spread throughout the body. And the body responds that way. When the animal is being slaughtered, the animal is feeling these emotions. Those emotions are spreading throughout the body of the animal. I take that body within me. I'm taking that sorrow within me. This sorrow will influence me. Those vibrations of suffering will give me suffering. This is another way that we take sorrow. There are many, many subtle ways like that. The money that I make, how am I making that money? Where is that money coming from? Is it coming from selling arms and ammunition to other people so they can kill each other? After all, people need to defend their countries, right? Am I investing in companies that are doing this kind of work? That money will also have an influence on my mind because it is coming from a source that is giving sorrow to others. I've caused sorrow to nature and therefore nature is giving us sorrow these days because we have exploited nature, right? Therefore it is coming back to us. So sorrow can come in many, many ways. And once it enters us, it will come out in some way. So the practice of stillness, the practice of yoga, the understanding is very important. But it is also very important for us to practice purity in our daily life. You know, it's summer. People want to do new things in summer. You want to do something really, really challenging in the summer? I'll give you a challenge. Let's see how many of you would want to do it. It's up to you if you want to do it. Yeah? First, give yourself time to rest every day, the mind, yoga. Half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the evening, 1 hour every day. Meditate. Go deep into silence. Experience the companionship of God. If you have difficulty doing it at home, you know we have a meditation center. It doesn't cost you anything. Every morning from 6 we have meditation on weekdays. Every evening from 6 again we have meditation on weekdays, half an hour. You can come. You're most welcome. Otherwise, do it at home. But minimum 1 hour of meditation every day. Second thing, try this out for 3 months. Give up meat, give up fish. Try it. Don't believe me. I experimented like that. No one could ever be a bigger meat eater than I was. And initially when people told me that, I said, why should I? Yeah, let me experiment. I tried it for 1 month. I could sense the difference. Tried it for longer and then of course I continued. Give up meat, give up fish, give up eggs. Do this for 3 months. That's it. And see, experiment with yourself. See if that makes a difference in your life. Yeah, do that. And the third thing, biggest challenge, stay away from all sexual activities for 3 months. Can you do that? Try it.
It's summer.
Especially in summer. Especially in summer. There's so many distractions out there. In the summer, everybody wants to go out there and do all sorts of things. So maybe at this time, you do the opposite. Stay indoors. You know, for me, I don't like the sun so much. In the summer, I'm always indoors. People find it very strange. Utroli merkelit. Very, extremely strange. So that's how it is. So it's easy for me. But really, try it out. I speak from experience. One of the practices in Raja Yoga is celibacy, for those who want to do it. And I've been doing it for 17 years. I know the difference. Try it out, yes.
Can you explain that difference after 3 months?
It has to be your experience.
Yeah, but
one is, you will find, at least in my experience, and the experience of others that I have seen, you will find a very deep sense of soft power within you. You will get lesser affected by things happening around you. You will find more love for others. Learn to express love without touch. See the power in that. Nothing wrong with touch, but you know.
I wasn't speaking so much of the physical activity. I thought about the food thing.
Yeah. Very important. So you can try whatever you want to try. You don't want to try everything, that's okay. But those of you who really want to do this, do these three things for 3 months. June, July, August. Yeah, summertime. A difficult time to do it. But do it and see. It's an experimentation. How do we know? Spiritual truths, how much can one explain? They have to be experienced. To know the truth of these, you have to experience them. There is really no other way. How can I demonstrate? How can you prove the existence of God? How can you? It's very difficult to do that. But these three things, 1 hour of meditation every day, half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the evening. Give up meat, fish and eggs. There is enough protein in vegetarian food. Eat lentils, eat soya meat, there is plenty. Tofu, plenty of stuff. That it will not make you weak. 17 years, I'm okay. A little bit overweight actually. And the third thing is, if you can, avoid all sexual activities. 3 months. Do everything else. Live in your family, with your relationships, give a lot of love, take a lot of love. Just don't do it in that way. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I think one of the big differences is when you go to the toilet, you really clearly can see that
the smell.
Because It's a bit, but what I'm trying to say is that you clearly see the benefit in the body. It's and that is, you know, you will see colors differently. You will see different just because of that.
Okay, but some things for you to experiment with if you want. And then when you come back, we can discuss it. Yes? Spiritually, we understand that sexual activity is not really an expression of love. It's a desire to experience pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes, it's a passion, it's an excitement, it's, you know, you want to experience pleasure. Love is something that it's a sense of belonging. You don't need to have sex with someone you love. We love so many people in our lives, we don't go around having sex with everyone. Sex is an expression of pleasure, it's not. And many people say lust and love, but actually it's lust, it comes from the desire to experience pleasure. Excitement. The thrill. See, it comes from emptiness. There is a deep experience of suffering. Many philosophers have actually spoken about the whole act of sex as violence. There is a violence in it. Because you're moving the other away from a state of peace. And you're moving yourself away from a state of peace. And you're getting pleasure out of it, yeah. It's like scratching. You know, you have a problem with skin. It's so pleasurable to scratch, right? But it makes it worse. Sexual desire operates like that. There is an emptiness inside. It creates a sort of discomfort, itching. And then I want to get it out of my system. And then I give in. And then, okay, there is a release. There is a sense of pleasure. But it actually deepens the emptiness a lot. That is a spiritual understanding. But of course, this is something that we can experience only through our personal experimentation, personal experience.
So if you want to make a baby.
But tell me something. How many of us have sex for having children? I mean, if you want to have sex to have children, you'll probably have sex 2-3 times in your life and that's it. 10 times maybe, not more than that. 1,000 times and that's it, tops. And by the way, now science and technology has grown so much, we actually don't need to have sex to make babies. We actually don't need, there is no need.
That's the solution.
Well, it is there, the technology is there for us. And by the way, look, in this Western world, in this advanced world, it's so free and open and, you know, about sex also, we still remember and respect the virgin birth of Christ. Why do we do that? It doesn't make scientific sense. We still hold on to that idea, the virgin birth of Christ. Because it does something in the heart. That is the original nature of the soul, purity. And we hold on to that. So we have the possibility of trying and experimenting with ourselves. Okay, enough for today. Then shall we finish with some meditation? Deep silence. The lights. Allowing the mind and the body to settle down. Of this physical existence, I allow myself to disappear once again, deep within. Going deep within myself, I become the form of the point. I, the soul, just a tiny point of light. Sparkling in the center of the brain, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears,
second I go beyond this physical body, this physical world, to that invisible world of light. The residence of the Supreme. And I place myself under the healing light of the Supreme. Under the healing light of God, my Father, my Mother, my friend. My companion. The ocean of peace. The unlimited fountain of purity. Experiences healing light entering me, filling me up from deep within. Returning the soul to its original state of fullness, bliss. Completeness. A state beyond desire. Nowhere to go, nothing to do, just be. A soul in the presence of God, two sparkling stars of conscient energy. The mind totally at rest, I hold on to this blissful silence of being a soul in the presence of the Supreme. And holding on to this state of fullness, I allow myself to return back to this world of matter, back to this physical costume of mine, this body. And once again I take my place in the center of the brain, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. I, the soul, the being of life.